And I appreciate your time very much today, Secretary
McGinn. It's great to be with you, Francis.
Tell me about the priorities in the Navy now for energy in the coming years, especially as it pertains to renewable energy forms.
Sure. We have our priorities for energy because they enhance warfighting effectiveness and operational efficiency. At the bottom of our rationale, firm base, is we're doing this because it improves mission readiness. And that's what we're all about for our Navy and Marine Corps. So we think about energy in two broad categories. One, of course, that we're familiar with is the installation energy. It's something it focuses on use of electricity, obviously, just like it does in the civilian sector. And then in the other category is operational energy, and that is primarily focused on liquid fuels, fuels that power our combat vehicles, our ships, our airplanes, helicopters, and are used to carry out our missions around the world. In the renewable energy area, that is in both categories, installation energy and in operational energy. In installation energy, the reason we're pursuing renewable energy is to look for a more diversified portfolio that brings us more energy resilience and security, as well as lower costs, because we'll be less reliant on the traditional forms of electrical production. The costs for renewable energy, renewable electricity, are coming down dramatically. Wind, solar, we continue to pursue all forms of renewable energy in a couple of categories. One, just power that we can buy, clean power that we can buy, that diversifies our portfolio and lowers our costs. And there are also categories where we want to build renewable energy on our installations. China Lake, 13 megawatts, is a good example of that type of initiative. On the operational side, we are focusing on creating diversity of our transportation fuel, primarily through investments in the rapidly emerging biofuels industry. There are a couple of ways we've gone about this. Most recently, we initiated, through an announcement by Secretary Vilsack and Secretary Mabus, a program we call Farm to Fleet. This is to create a new normal for the Defense Logistics Agency to put out a solicitation to biofuel companies for delivery in 2015, next year, of biofuel blends, anywhere from 10% of a total blend to 50%, at a competitive price. And this is going to be fuel that will be used in the form of F-76 for our ships and JP-5 for our helicopters and airplanes, and will establish, as I mentioned, a new normal. Of course, the Navy and the Marine Corps are using biofuels, and it will be at a competitive price with the price of petroleum.
That must be very satisfying. I've seen Secretary Mabus and Admiral Cullum take any number of incidents of heat on Capitol Hill for the prices that you paid as that cost curve came down. So it must be satisfying to get to a point where that's
exactly
not an
issue. Exactly, and just to go over that, the prices we paid were for an operational experiment called the Great Green Fleet in 2012, and it was a resounding success. Like many things that we do in research, development, test, and evaluation, you pay a higher premium. I suspect that Admiral Rickover and his team back in the late 40s, early 50s were paying a pretty high price per kilowatt hour of nuclear power. But we do these things in the Navy because it's the right thing for our mission readiness, and it's the right thing ultimately for our nation.
The term resilience is a term that I hear from every branch, OSD level, everywhere I go in the Pentagon. Resilience is important. What does that term mean in your portfolio, especially in the energy area?
It means that you're going to have the energy that you need where and when you need it in the quantities that you need it, and that it is resilient to the forces of nature, to potential attack, and also to mechanical failure. We're trying to create systems that don't have single-point failures. We're trying to, I've used the term, diversify our energy sources. Just like a financial portfolio that is resilient, you need to have diversification. You can't put all your eggs in one basket. That's a comment I make because it's close to Easter.
Mm-hmm. That's very nicely done, too, by the way. I've talked to your counterpart, Secretary Hammack, about some of the reasons that renewable energy is valuable in the Army. Supply chain is something that she always cites, especially in theater like Afghanistan. You obviously have a different landscape to worry about a supply chain for, but tell me about the supply chain implications for renewables.
In the case of our wonderful Marines, it's exactly the same as the Army. In fact, we coordinate very closely with Catherine Hammack and her team and our Marine Corps to make sure that we are leveraging the best practices by the Army and the Marine Corps in reducing our reliance on fuel logistics supply chains going to forward operating bases in austere and dangerous environments. We've learned these lessons painfully in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we are changing our tactics, techniques, procedures. We're changing our technologies. We're creating really good, strong partnerships with industry to try to reduce our reliance on long supply chains.
How is the Navy able to benefit from the energy boom that we're experiencing here within our own borders, especially in the Midwest with the natural gas fracking and so on?
It really is a wonderful time for our nation because we're getting extraction of oil, of liquid gases. We're getting a great deal of natural gas. And this is really good for our economy. It's good for our national security. The thing that we want to make sure everybody understands, though, is that from a national security perspective, including our military security and our economic security, that this is buying us time. It's not infinite amount of fossil fuel. So we need to use the time wisely. Right in the midst of this boom in fossil fuel is the time to also plan for alternatives to that fossil fuel, and at the same time we are using it. For example, we are, in our non-tactical vehicle fleet, seeing more and more use of natural gas-powered vehicles, buses, trucks, etc., because it makes a lot of sense from an economic standpoint. On a BTU-to-BTU basis, it's much less expensive to power some of these heavy vehicles with natural gas than it is diesel fuel. But also, it has better environmental outcomes for our local and regional air quality, because you have much less pollutants going out the tailpipes of those vehicles.
I'd like to go back to farm to fleet for a moment, and you talked about the cost curve going down. What's driving that? Is that primarily being driven by activities that you're undertaking deliberately, or is it just a volume increase,
right,
or some other factor or combination of things?
It's a combination of factors. One, of course, is that when we send the signal out that we are in the business of buying biofuels, that is a powerful motivator for investors and the producers of feedstocks, the creators and builders of biorefineries, the distributors, the blenders. They say, hey, there's a market there. Let's get some money into this and let's scale up. And then because of that scale, we get the so-called economies of scale, where we refine the production processes, we refine what kinds of and the way in which you harvest feedstocks. And the feedstock diversification is pretty interesting. Everything from recycled cooking oil to wood chips to agricultural byproducts. It's pretty much across municipal solid waste. It's across the board. And there's a lot of good science and engineering that's going into the production of these biofuels.
What has the shift in strategy, the rebalance to the Pacific and the Middle East, meant for the priorities that you need to establish in energy?
When I think about the Pacific, I think about vast differences. And I base that on my 35 years of service in uniform, much of which was conducted in the Pacific. So when you are going to the Pacific and you are dealing with those vast distances, you really need to be concerned about range and endurance. So to the extent that our investments in our existing fleet and our changes in design for future fleet take into consideration energy as a key warfighting capability, we're going to get more range, more payload, more endurance out there. In terms of the amount of and the type of fuel that we use, we want to use less fuel to and have more mission capability out of it. We don't want to degrade the mission at all. But we also are forging partnerships with nations like Australia and some of the other Rim of the Pacific nations as they develop their own domestic biofuel production. We have a letter of cooperation that the Secretary of the Navy, Secretary Mabus, signed several years ago with the Navy of Australia to continue to pursue and deploy and to use and additional forms of liquid fuel in the form of biofuels. We just recently had Secretary Mabus in Italy, where he signed a similar letter of cooperation with the Minister of Defense and the Italian Navy, so that we are slowly but very deliberately and surely establishing a global infrastructure for the production and delivery of biofuels to power our fleet.
When I talked to Admiral Cullum, it's been a couple of years now, we discussed the Great Green Fleet, and he talked about the cooperation with a variety of partners
right.
in that. What's the status of that? Will you continue to do those exercises in that format, or will you do them in a different format, or how will
yes.
that proceed?
We will continue, of course, every 2 years with the RIMPAC exercises. Of course, the 2012 one was primarily focused on can we, in fact, from production facility all the way through to the engines of our helicopters, airplanes, ships, use biofuel blends, and we successfully accomplished that. For future RIMPACs, we'll continue to incorporate biofuels, but in 2014, it's going to be an emphasis on some of the technologies, the tactics of and techniques, procedures that we are using our ships and airplanes in this exercise. And then in 2016, we are going to be calling that the year of the Great Green Fleet, where we're actually going to be deploying battle groups, amphibious readiness groups, carrier battle groups, to various locations around the world, typical locations where the combatant commanders need those awesome expeditionary capabilities. And we are going to be doing that increasingly with energy efficiency technology, with better techniques, and also with biofuels.
There is a stereotype, I imagine, among your former colleagues still in uniform, that when they hear some of these things, they think, here comes the green stuff. Do you think that your experience in uniform, that your tenure in uniform, gives you a little more currency to be able to talk to some maybe skeptics
sure.
When it comes to these kinds of things?
I think it does, but I think it's skeptics that may be outside of our Department of the Navy, more so than inside. I have had, over the past several months, really, really great discussions with Admiral Harry Harris out at Pacific Fleet, Admiral Bill Gortney down in Norfolk, Commander of Fleet Forces Command, and they really, really get it. They and their teams really get it. I was recently in Norfolk where we had a fleet energy training day where we had all of the type commanders, air, surface, submarine, military sea lift command, that were all talking about the practices that they and the technologies that they had been embracing in their parts of our Navy to really get better mission effectiveness and better operational efficiency, considering energy. I'll be going in a couple of weeks to Camp Lejeune to talk with Marines, just as I did back in February out at Camp Pendleton with the Marine grunts and Marine leadership, everybody from PFCs up to generals, and they really get it because it is about mission readiness and operational efficiency.
Was that the key element to getting people to understand that this was beneficial?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a misperception that this is all about being green, that we're trying to win some EPA award. We probably should win an award like that, but that is not why we're doing it. This is, in fact, all about looking over the horizon at the future security environment in which our Navy and Marine Corps are going to be operating in, and making the investments, making the decisions in technology, in partnerships, and in our culture, our knowledge of and awareness of energy, and making a much more effective expeditionary force in the form of our Navy and Marine Corps.
I could do all of our conversation, I think, about energy, but I want to talk about your installations portfolio too, Mr. Secretary. Where do you stand today in the Navy on base realignment and closure?
We support the President's request and Secretary Hagel's request to conduct a base realignment and closing round in 2017. We do it because we found from past experiences that doing a detailed data-driven analysis of what our base infrastructure is a very, very healthy thing. In fact, going back to 1991, right after the Cold War ended, when we did the first BRAC, had our Navy and Marine Corps team not really leaned into this idea of looking at our infrastructure versus our force structure versus our end strength, we would not be able to afford the kind of capabilities that are out there in the fleet today. So we welcome a BRAC round. We know how to do them and do them well, and they've produced good results. I think that this would be a good analytical drill for us to go through and to see, are we in balance? We've made a lot of changes over the ensuing 23 years since 1991, and we would welcome the opportunity to just take a look and update that.
One of the arguments that members of Congress use sometimes is, well, the 2005 round didn't really save a whole lot of money by the time we got to the end of it and did the analysis. Do you have a sense that you have a good cadre of lessons learned that you can apply if you do a round in 2017 and avoid that this time?
I think we do, and in talking with my counterparts in Office of the Secretary of Defense as well as in Army and Air Force, there are a lot of good lessons. One of the things that has been pointed out is that in 2005, that was more of a realignment and transformational type of BRAC experience than it was just simply on efficiency. But we did make a lot of we did gain a lot of efficiencies, and we have much lower bills, infrastructure bills today because of it.
The infrastructure priorities that you want to address, you've already laid them out to Congress in the 2015 budget request.
Right.
What are the priorities that you want to drive most importantly in fiscal 15?
As I said in my testimony to all of the committees on military construction and SRM, the priority is to manage risk. We recognize right up front that we are not investing the kind of dollars in MILCON and SRM that we have in the past. Because of those previous investments, we're in pretty good shape, but that's for the near term. We've got to make darn sure that we are making investments to avoid failures of critical infrastructure or failures to meet quality of life and readiness needs in our shore installation infrastructure. And we work very, very closely in our Marine Corps and Navy with our uniform leadership to identify what the risks are and to manage and mitigate those with investment dollars.
As we work through sequestration, the shutdown, and so on, Admiral Greenert and the other chiefs talked about the impact on readiness. What, if anything, will you be able to do to try to restore is not the best word, but to try to catch up with some of the losses that you've sustained in the readiness area, particularly in your installations portfolio?
I think it's going to have to rely, in fact, on a really detailed level of analysis. We have a lot of methods that are being incorporated by our Navy Facilities Engineering Command, Admiral Kate Gregory and her great team, as well as Admiral Bill French, the commander of Naval Installations Command, that are really, really looking at where we are taking risk with our installations. And we are prioritizing those where they have the greatest return in mission readiness to support the fleet operators out there. We're also working very closely with our RDT&E community, our systems commands, to make sure that our depots and our shipyards are putting out the kind of quality and the kind of environment that we want them to.
When it comes to readiness, what have been the greatest impacts that you've seen in your portfolio?
I would say I'm impressed. I've been in the job now for going on 8 months, and I have really, really been impressed by the level of expertise, the dedication, and the talent that is out there that is taking a look at our infrastructure and making sure that, it's consistent across the board. Everybody gets it, that this is all about supporting the fleet and our Marines out there on these installations, and that we're making the right decisions. It's not perfect. Things break, but we try to anticipate where we may be taking too much risk, and we're spending just-in-time dollars in some cases. In other cases, because of the previous investments in MILCON and SRM dollars, we've got a pretty good infrastructure.
I want to go back to the unique situation that you're in, having spent a long, distinguished career in uniform and now in a civilian role. And I'm very interested in the ability that you have to go to your colleagues, former colleagues, and speak to them in their language, and you're not just some political who's coming in right. and saying, this is how we're going to do things. What advantages do you think that gives you in being able to do your current job, and how does that experience inform what you do on a day-to-day basis?
It's a tremendous advantage. I don't have to spend as much time understanding how our organization works. I can spend my time in focusing and getting in depth on the issues. Because I don't have to spend a lot of study time on acronyms, for example, or gazing at organizational wiring diagrams and trying to figure out who does what. I know that from my time in uniform. So I can really have conversations speaking the language about what is the issue, what is the challenge, how can we turn that issue or challenge into an opportunity. And I also have the benefit of having had more than 10 years of experience after I hung up my uniform in the private sector. So I can translate, if you will, public and private sector discussions. I really have been emphasizing this idea of partnerships, that we need to continue to strengthen our partnerships across government, within the Department of Defense, certainly with Department of the Army and Air Force, with OSD, across the federal government. Our partnership with the Department of Agriculture and Energy are great examples of that. But importantly, with the states and the communities in which our installations are located, with the private sector. And the private sector has done so much and will continue to do so much in bringing us good ideas. I ask them, bring us your business cases. Tell us about some projects you may have done related to renewable energy or energy efficiency with a university or a commercial light industry complex or a municipality. And we will use that information to inform how we go about issuing our requests for proposals and requests for information. So I really do feel blessed that having had that experience and speaking the language, as you say, of my colleagues in uniform, as well as the private sector experience, we can really, really make some good progress.
One final question for you, sir. It's a beautiful ship that is in that painting above your desk. Can you tell me the story of that ship?
It is a commercial sailing vessel named the Three Brothers. And one of the things that I've noticed when you get up really, really close on the ship is that it doesn't have any smokestacks. So it's a renewable energy ship from the past. It also has a lot of hands on deck, which indicates to me that the institution of the prioritization and deployment of our technology has reduced a lot of our manpower costs and how we move ships across the water.
I think a renewable energy ship on your wall means that you've really bought into this, doesn't it, sir?
I sure have. We have a lot of great ships out there. They're getting better all the time. We work very closely with Secretary Stackley and his team, with the systems commanders, and, of course, with our ultimate customers, which are the fleet and our Marines out there.
terrific conversation. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you, Francis.